Hello, and welcome to episode 5 of Podcast to Be Named Later, the official podcast of OutfieldFlyRule.com. I am Brent Blackwell, here today with TJ Alexander.
Yo.
And Chris Jervis.
Hello.
He's back.
Yeah. Woo-hoo. We needed some help. We needed some reinforcements for the outfield. We will be talking about the Braves outfield depth chart here in a little bit. First, any Braves news y'all want to talk about?
I don't think there's anything major.
Nothing I want to talk about. I think Schertz and Andrew Jones are in the Braves Hall of Fame.
Good.
Yeah, it was announced this week. I guess that ends that speculation about whether he'll ever make it. It's a good move for the Braves. I mean, it gives the fans something to look forward to this year. It's probably a one-night draw to get some people in the door.
That's true. Get them in this year and not next year when you don't need the attendance.
Plus, Andrew Jones, you know, made his bones at Turner Field, and it's a good way to send Turner Field out. And
sure.
And people like us, and you know, from my age, I think I'm the youngest of the three. I think people really knew and liked John Schertz in the 90s. Kids,
yeah.
Even.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, that'll be kind of fun, too.
Don't think there's much more going on. The prodigal son returned home on a minor league deal.
Yeah,
we'll get to him in a little bit. Yeah.
I think there's something going on in Florida that just started this week.
Oh, yes. Spring training has begun. Hooray. It's baseball season.
Yep. Yeah, we get. First pitch is Tuesday at 1 against the Orioles.
Our podcast next week will be coming to you live directly from the Disney Resort. I'm kidding, sorry.
Yeah. You guys subscribe and tell all your friends to subscribe, and maybe we could get the funding to go to spring training next year. That would be fantastic.
That would be fun.
Yeah, tell your friends. All right.
Although,
for our benefit.
To be fair, we should probably give them more content to subscribe to and read.
Nah,
I'm editing that out. Yeah. All right, outfielders. We're going to start with the major league starters, the guys we think will be getting the lion's share of the starts in the outfield this year. We talked about a few guys last time, a few guys who play infield that will get some playing time in left field, like Adonis Garcia and Kelly Johnson and Emilio Bonifacio. So just remember those guys, too. We're going to start with the probable majority left fielder this year. Hector Olivera, Cuban import, which a lot of people put a lot of stock into. Acquired from the Dodgers last year at the trade deadline in probably the most controversial trade the Braves have made in a while. What are your thoughts on Olivera? It's hard to have any for me.
He's a question mark. He was a proven solid producer in Cuba. And Cuba has genuinely, the Cuban Series Nacional, their major... their highest-ranked league has generally been the equivalent of AA to AAA, roughly. So a guy that puts up really good numbers at the Cuba Series Nacional can generally at least be a productive major leaguer, given the time. I don't think Olivera is going to be a big power hitter. I think he's going to be primarily a singles-doubles hitter with double-digit home runs, 15 home runs maybe. I think he's going to be relatively consistent. He has decent bat control and decent bat discipline. I think he's going to have a solid on-base percentage. But all of this is all speculated on what he's done in the past in Cuba. We really haven't seen a whole lot of him healthy and regularly at the major league level. I still think he's going to have good on-base potential and probably be a good 5-6 hitter in the lineup.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to expect for me. And also defensively in left field, I have no idea.
No idea. I think he could probably do it. I mean, he played second base as a youngster, but from what I've been reading, he's put on a lot of muscle since he was in Cuba.
I think he's got the frame to do that, though, and be okay.
Right. So,
and the Braves must, too.
He apparently did not feel very comfortable at third base, and the Braves, after watching him play some extended time at third base, felt the same way. So that brought about the move to left field. I don't think he loses any value by moving to left field. I don't think, suddenly he's not, the trade is somehow in retrospect worse because we moved him from third base to left field. When the Braves were scouting him in the offseason, when all these other teams were scouting him in the offseason, he was projected as a third baseman or left fielder then.
Yeah.
So it's not something that's unexpected. It was entirely within the realm of possibility when he was being scouted during the offseason that he would be a left fielder at the major league level. So I don't think that hurts his value any. I think what hurts his value right now is any question about what is his production and is he going to be healthy.
Yeah, I think I'm really interested in watching him this year just because there were flashes of brilliance last year, and then there were other times where, I mean, he looked
overwhelmed.
He looked overwhelmed, and he may have been overwhelmed. It's a hard adjustment. He's batted, I think, 222 times as a professional, so he's still pretty new to, well, as a professional in the United States.
Right.
So he's still pretty new. There's an adjustment period, and there could be a breakout this year, potentially. I don't know.
And there was something that I think we were discussing just prior to going live that could happen. I think you mentioned it as a possibility. I was kind of, don't mention this. TJ had seen something where, what was it you had seen?
Just one website online had him projected as a AAA to start the year. And that's obviously weird to see. Immediately, one of y'all knew. It's because I think we have 25 men on all of our position players. Major league contracts. Somebody, we have to dump somebody.
He's the guy who we can, he's the only guy right now who could start in the minors.
When TJ first mentioned that, I was kind of, I don't like that. That idea is bad. That's going to kind of be the Braves moving away from him. But after listening to you two talk about it, you're right that he does have options that would allow us to get him a few more professional at bats while also working on his skills at left field while also trying to get rid of some of the other players.
It was a whirlwind of a year for him last year because you got to think he came to the United States. He started playing. I don't think he started playing immediately either at the beginning of the year. He had an adjustment period. He started playing for the Dodgers minor league. Then he gets traded. He has to go.
And he was hurt in between that.
He's hurt. He has to move to Gwinnett. Then at the end of the season, he gets called up to the majors, hits a couple of home runs, has a double, I think, in his first game. And then it goes through some struggles. And then they're like, at the end of the year, they say, okay, we're moving you to left field now.
And all of that with huge expectations because of the contract that he signed during the offseason.
So, a couple of weeks of just like, honestly, we don't need him in 2016 for a playoff run or anything. I don't think 2 weeks of Oliveira is going to be the difference between us going to the playoffs or not. So, I can see them. Now, it won't surprise me if he's on the opening day roster, but at the same time, I could see them saying, you know what, Beckham, Bonifacio, Johnson, Swisher, Bourne, these guys are all having good spring trainings, and
let's try and get something for him while we can.
Yeah, let's just give Oliveira a couple weeks in Gwinnett to just, calm down and just get into a routine.
And we don't need him to be the anchor of the lineup either. All we need is some steady production from him. I'm trying to think of an equivalent from the years past in the Braves years, but he doesn't have to be the big power hitter or the big guy driving in runs. Really, he doesn't even need to. I guess the best equivalent would probably be a slightly more powerful version of Nick Markakis last year. A guy who gets on base regularly, can not strike out a lot and walk a good bit, and just keep some good bat discipline going throughout the lineup.
Oliveira played for 7 teams during last season.
Wow.
He played Dodgers rookie ball, Braves rookie ball, Braves single A, Dodgers double A, Braves triple A, Dodgers triple A, and Atlanta.
Then that's not counting the two Arizona Fall League teams that he played for.
Right. Maybe they're just, I don't know. I could see them being opting to just
slow their roll
with him a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, my main thing on Oliveira is that he's batted 80 times in the majors.
Yeah.
And he's about to play a position he's never played in the majors before. So it's just too hard to predict. I mean,
yeah, I'm somewhat optimistic on him. I think we have.
I think he'll bat around 260 or so, and he'll be fine. I think Chris is right. I think his OBP will be.
I think he's going to be 340-ish.
Yeah, maybe not as high as Markakis was, especially in the first half of last year. But
I mean, for the comparable, I guess for Oliveira last year might have been Kelly Johnson for the Braves. Johnson hit 275 with a 320 on base percentage, and that's kind of what Oliveira is going to be.
He could do that. I think he'd have a little more power.
Yeah,
than Kelly.
It's one of those things where there's a lot of unknown, and all you can do is kind of make a somewhat educated guess that borders on pure wild-ass speculation for what he's going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's our professional analysis.
Okay. Next up is Ender Inciarte. All right, Ender Inciarte is projected to be the starting center fielder for the Braves, and I really hope he is. I hope he starts every game for the next 5 years for the Braves. At least right now, I hope that. We got him in the Arizona trade. He's one of the many useful players we got from Arizona in the Shelby Miller trade, besides Dansby Swanson, and another guy who we're going to be raving about on the next podcast, Aaron Blair. Inciarte comes over. He used to be in the... What system did he used to be in? I know the Phillies had him at some point. Okay, I know what happened. He came up with the Diamondbacks. He came up in the minors with the Diamondbacks. The Phillies drafted him in the Rule 5 draft a few years ago and then let him go back to Arizona. They didn't put him on the team. And it was like one of their bad teams.
God bless Ruben Amaro Jr.
Yeah, they didn't find room for him on their team, and they sent him back to Arizona where he broke out and he turned into one of the best defensive players in the game. And he's a contact, speed, good defense center fielder. And I'm excited that we have him.
His batting profile is somewhat similar to Simmons in the sense that doesn't walk terribly a lot. He's probably slightly below average in drawing walks. Very good strikeout rate, very good contact rate. The difference is that he actually has a little bit better skill with the bat and is a little bit more line drive prone than Simmons, a lot less pop-up prone. And that's what was one of the things killing Simmons was he was popping up a lot of balls. But Inciarte seems to project fairly well with the bat. There's been some talk that he would be near the top of the Braves lineup, possibly even leading off. I would probably rather see him hitting second than leadoff. His on-base percentage last year, 338. For his career, it's 329. That's still, I expect that to go up, but it's still kind of low for a leadoff hitter. I'm really a fan of putting Nick Markakis at leadoff just for his huge on-base percentage.
Yeah.
We can hide his speed or lack thereof at the lineup a little bit better with the extra base hitters behind him. I'd like to see Inciarte either hitting second or maybe a little bit further down in the order, functioning as kind of a secondary leadoff man a little bit further down in the order. That's not a knock against him. It's just that I think there's a better option for leading off the original lineup. But great, great defensive player. One of the best defensive players in baseball. Plays all three outfield positions very well, so we can move him around based on promotions, trades, injuries. I really look forward to watching him play this year. He, in some respects, reminds me a lot of Jason Hayward, a guy who doesn't do any one thing particularly well except defense. Any one thing particularly elite except for defense, but is pretty well across the board good at everything else.
I would say Inciarte's strikeout avoidance is elite also.
Yes,
he puts the ball in play. He has 111 career strikeouts and over 1,000 plate appearances.
11% K rate is very, very good. Fantastic. In this day and age.
Yeah, I mean, I think the reason that he's so exciting too is that you know he's going to be good. The defense rarely goes away. There's a chance that, I mean, my gut tells me he's probably, last year was a bit of an anomaly as far as just his average goes.
Right.
Like, I don't think he's a career 300 hitter necessarily. He's also at 25. He's only got 2 years under his belt. So he might be. And that's exciting.
He's probably a 280, 325, 335 kind of guy on...
That's what I would guess. But I also guess that just because career 300 hitters aren't. They don't happen all the time. And we definitely don't get them for Shelby Miller.
He's got 40, yeah. 40 steals and only 13 caught stealings in his career. That's good.
That's a good rate.
He's 25 years old also.
I mean, he immediately becomes, after Freeman, I mean, he's one of our best projected players.
Yeah.
He is our...
He might be our best projected player.
He is our... I think he's the best player that we have that's 25 or younger. Because I think Freeman is now 26, I think. I'm not sure.
And that's just... To be able to get him and the other stuff we got, I just can't believe. I still can't believe what we did.
God bless Dave Stewart.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. I think Inciarte is so good that Miller straight up for Inciarte, I would have considered a win for Atlanta.
Or at least a good trade.
Yeah.
This is the player that Coppolello was talking about when he said, like, I've gotten more offers for Inciarte than I did for Miller. And we got Inciarte and really good prospects.
Great prospects.
Yeah.
Two top 100 prospects.
I mean,
along with him.
Looking at his plate discipline, he doesn't swing at balls out of the strike zone. He makes good contact with balls in the strike zone. Doesn't take a lot of first pitch strikes. Doesn't swing strike very often. Matter of fact, very low on that. He's just a good, solid player at the plate. He's still, you know, it's early in his career. Last year, he was a league average hitter in terms of WRC+. But that's primarily driven by his lack of power. I mean, he's not a big power hitter. He's a singles doubles guy. It was also helped a little bit by the fact that his numbers are somewhat inflated by Arizona. This will be an interesting year to see if it comes down. But even factoring in the Arizona statistic inflation, he was still a league average batter with elite defense. Very similar to Hayward in that respect.
I like that I'm looking at his spray chart. There's line drives to all corners of the field, everywhere. And that's nice to see. Very nice to see.
He has a good bit of line drives, a good bit of ground balls, with few fly balls, if he can drop that ground ball rate just a little bit and hit a few more either line drives or fly balls, he's going to be very good. He's, for his career, there's two ground balls for every fly ball that he hits, and that's something that as his speed starts to fail him or as those balls start to find, those grounders start finding gloves, that's kind of going to work against him. Right. So if he can change that profile just slightly, he's going to be very, very good. Great contact. I mean, his contact rates are high, and his contact quality is good. 80% of his swings are medium or hard classifications by batted ball stats. So he is one that I think we can see good things from this year.
Yeah. I'm also really excited to watch him this year.
Yes.
Just because I didn't watch a lot of Arizona games over the last couple of years, and so I haven't really gotten a chance to watch him much.
Some of the video clips I've seen of him playing defense, you don't have the sprawled out, laying out like Jim Edmonds, and you don't have the wall climbing like you saw from Kevin Kiermaier, who, by the way, is a tremendous, tremendous fielder. Mm-hmm. He just seems to cover ground and get there and make the play. See, we like that.
We like him. All right, right fielder, Nick Markakis, in year two of his four-year contract?
4 years, $44 million when he was signed a couple of years ago.
Finally an outfielder that nobody's really excited to watch play.
Yeah, it's just like we don't have a problem with him. Right?
Yeah. A lot of people are expecting his power to return because of his neck injury healing and whatnot. He's actually been on a 5-year decline in power.
He hasn't hit for power since the Bush administration.
Right. His fly ball rate has been declining for 6 straight years. He's lost almost 35 feet on his average fly ball distance since 2011. He's also not playing in a park anymore that was actually very conducive to left-handed batters. And when he was in Camden Yards, the fence was about 10 feet shorter right field, and it was also 10 feet closer in, and it was also almost 2 feet shorter. In Atlanta, he's got a taller fence that's further back.
But the right field wall in Camden?
It's smaller than the right field wall in Atlanta.
I thought it's really high up.
Maybe the site I was looking at had bad info then. Maybe it was a previous. It said Baltimore, not Camden, so maybe it was a previous one prior to Camden Yards. Yeah, because they have that brick above it, don't they?
The brick. Well, they fence. Get the warehouse out beyond, and maybe they may have shortened it. There may be a wall in front of that facade there, but there is a big thing. Their fans are like high up on the. I don't even know if there are fans.
You're talking about right field, right?
Right field.
Yeah, it's 318 to the corner, so it is short.
It's short, and I thought it was tall.
Like 373 to right center.
Like Fenway left.
Right center is 373, and it's 383 to Atlanta. In Atlanta.
That's enough to... We're not talking about a guy who was like a 25 home run hitter every year, right, who all of a sudden hit two. He went from
right
10,
field
11,
fence height is
12.
21, so that's wrong. So you can edit all that out.
Yeah, well, you know, Markakis, I think some power will return. I think he'll hit more than 3 homers. I don't think he's going to hit more than like 10.
I don't think he's going to hit more than 5.
Just the sentence, the power could return, is misleading.
Right.
Because
it implies.
It makes you think that he had power once.
And his doubles, you know, he doesn't have to hit 15 or 20 homers. If he is a consistent on-base threat with just singles and doubles, that's fine, especially if we do, as I mentioned in one of the other players previously. I like Markakis at leadoff. I know there are people who like the small, fast, speedy guys that spray the ball around at leadoff. That's profiling, man. That's profiling.
I mean, I like those guys too, but we don't really have those guys. We've got just short, speedy guys who don't spray the ball around, or we got guys who are slow that spray the ball around.
Markakis sprays the ball around. He gets on base 36% of the time, 35% of the time.
It's 37 last year.
Yeah, and I don't expect that to be the same, but he'll be a 360 on base percentage guy probably. Mm-hmm. He hits singles and doubles. And with Freddie Freeman and Oliveira and even Inciarte and Garcia and the guys behind him capable of hitting extra base hits, his lack of speed is hidden. Because they're moving him around with the extra base hits. We don't need him to create an extra base with his speed.
Yeah,
he plays a decent right field still too.
That would be an interesting topic for another podcast sometime. But I agree that steals and base running creativity is more valuable at the bottom of the order than it is at the top.
I agree. Because at the bottom of the order, you have guys who are more likely to hit singles.
Need to take advantage too.
Right. You have to create the extra base rather than taking the one that's given.
Right. But yeah, you know what Markakis is. He's
likable.
Yeah. He'll give you 1-3 WAR, probably, in right field this year. which is
also a good reminder of how old Oliveira is when you look at their age. And Marquegas, who I feel like is ancient, is a year older
right.
than Oliveira is.
All right, so those are the starters. There are two more players on the bench that we've not discussed yet that are outfielders primarily, or at least, I don't know, we've just managed to group them in the outfield. One of them definitely is. They're the two players the Braves got from the Indians last year in the Chris Johnson trade. Former Brave, Michael Bourne, and Nick Swisher. Let's start with Bourne.
Damn. I had to be looking at an old profile.
Like Cam Newton from the 1800s. Like, the wall is only six inches tall. It's a water hose.
Now I'm going to have to change my argument.
I don't know why he can't hit home runs.
Right. Yeah. Well, no, it is. I think Camden does play better for lefty power.
Well, it's definitely right shorter and whatnot.
And I don't know if it's the wind, but the power just goes that direction out there. That was right. It just wasn't. The height threw me off.
I'll quit talking about the height of the wall and start talking about the gravitational pull.
Was it Camden Yards, the game we watched when the game with nobody there? Was that in Camden Yards?
Yeah, yes. That's the one they. Because it was the riots. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Me and Brent watched it here. It was really funny.
It was really awkward.
It was like when they did the home run derby on This Week in Baseball, where it's just the two players and the announcer sitting there. Yeah. There's nobody watching it.
I remember those.
This one, we on MLB TV, you can turn off the announcers and you just listen to ballpark audio.
It was so weird.
But it was like
you could hear footsteps. Like yeah. you could hear.
You hear him like, go on now, come on.
It was like crack of the bat and then
safe.
Safe.
It's like, oh God, it's like I'm there.
Attaboy. Attaboy. Yeah. Attaboy. All
right, sorry.
Michael Bourne, former Brave, current Brave. We remember him as a great speedster with good on-base skills and stolen base totals and not much power. And he is still his old self in the not much power department. And that's pretty much it.
2012 was a very good year for Mr. Bourne.
Mm-hmm.
3.48 on base percentage, 6 WAR. That was 6.2 Fangraphs WAR. Just played a tremendous center field. Very good with the bat. He was above average batter. Incredible walk rate. In fact, the highest walk rate of his career. All of that going into a career free agent season.
Yeah.
That was his walk year.
I bet a lot of Braves would not know that he struck out 155 times that year.
He's not a particularly contact prone hitter.
I bet old Braves fans would have thought of Michael Bourne as a contact guy.
Just he was swinging for the fences that year.
Just because
it was super obvious.
Doesn't hit. Yeah, he had 9 home runs that year.
It was so obvious. I remember being like upset watching him bat that year. Yeah. Like, dude, come on.
He would come up in big moments and strike out too. There was no like it wasn't that he could just adjust down and make contact. Right. He's a strikeout guy in those days, and I think he still is. Yeah, he struck out 76 times in basically a half season of games.
Yeah, his strikeout rate last year, his rate last year was 22.2%.
Right,
that's above the league average.
You can get by when you're a power hitter doing that. That's great for a power hitter, but when you have 0 home runs and a 294 slugging percentage. You got to put the bat on the ball, and he didn't do it.
The Michael Bourne that we have now is basically a guy whose sole purpose is to teach Malik Smith in spring training how to read pitchers, how to get a jump, and how to slap the ball into the ground and use your speed as an advantage. Bourne is not a particularly good player anymore.
Oh, no.
But he has limited function if we can pick and choose his roles. One thing to remember about Bourne, too, this year, he's in the final year of his contract unless his option kicks in. He has a vesting option. If he receives 550 plate appearances, then his contract automatically renews for another $12 million, I think amount. The vesting, I believe, is 12.
It is 12. You're right, 12.
And
well, the addition of Inciarte is pretty much.
Nobody wants him to vest, which is one of the reasons we can't trade him right now. In addition to us wanting him to mentor Malik Smith, teams that are looking for outfielders right now are looking for either reserve outfielders, and nobody's going to pay $14 million for a reserve outfielder, or they're looking for starters, and nobody wants his vesting option to kick in, so they're going to wait until he's available later in the year when they can know that that vesting option is not going to happen.
Either that or Atlanta just picks up a bunch of that money and lets him be a reserve somewhere. That's right. The other option is we could just pick up the... Because Cleveland's already given us $5 million, so we're only paying him $9 million this year.
Right.
That trade starts looking really good next season.
Yes, it does. And that's the entire reason that trade was made, was to accelerate that money.
We could just pick up $5, $6 million of that contract if anybody wanted Bourne.
Right. And well, sure therein lies kind of the issue. Who wants
to pay $3 million for him?
I mean, we've been trying to get rid of him and his date from that dance since they arrived, basically.
It's a sticky situation just because you want to play them. Right. So their numbers can get inflated, so you can trade them, but you can't play them too much. If you play them too much, nobody's going to want to trade for them because they don't want them anywhere near.
Were Oliveira not playing in left field, they could have platooned in left field. We could have controlled those numbers while still giving them some chances to build up their value. But, you know, Bourne's not a terrible player. He's just not the player that Braves fans remember from 3 years
ago. Right. Now he's a 315 on base with 10 steals.
Right.
Yeah,
and he's rapidly losing speed in the outfield, although he's probably still functional.
Yeah. How about Nick Swisher?
Swisher, as recently as 2 years ago, I'm sorry, was a functional player. I don't particularly think he is now. I think the injuries have caught up with him. He probably will still draw his walks.
2 years, you're talking 2013, I guess?
Yes, because 2014 he was injured a good bit.
He had a 278 on base.
Right, so 2013, yeah. 2 years ago. Whatever.
2013, he was still, yeah, he was
right, he's
not
still
bad.
A functional player. I think injuries have caught up with him. I think he's probably best served as being a DH.
Yeah, his knees are no good.
He's a very likable guy. I like Nick Swisher. He brings a lot of energy to the team. He's, you know, a veteran presence, all of that. It's a roster slot. And, you know, we're starting to reach a point where we have so many veterans with their veteran presence. Who are they going to provide this veteran presence for? You know, if we're giving them all the roster spots.
Yeah, we're kind of top-heavy with veterans.
Yeah, I think we're at a point now where I don't expect to see Nick Swisher break spring training with the Braves unless he just goes crazy during spring.
Who plays first base if Swisher's not on the opening day roster?
Kelly Johnson.
Is that how often did he play there last year? I remember him playing some.
Johnson's been a fairly somewhat regular first baseman throughout his career.
I get it.
But I'm not sure. Well, when I say fairly regular, he's done it always as a backup and in reserve.
And I'll say this then. Who plays first base when Freddie Freeman gets hurt once we trade Kelly Johnson to a World Series team?
Yeah, one of those guys we talked about, the old Oakland player, Nate
Fryman.
Nate Fryman, or Freeman. We just replaced one Freeman with another.
Kelly Johnson's played 60 games at first base, 46 of them were starts.
57 of them in the last 2 years.
Yes.
Good.
So he's recently picked up more games.
Yeah, he can play there. And that would be the other way to put Oliver on the team. And this is something we'll talk about deeper in the spring training, more in detail, because right now it's all just speculation, and it's one guy saying I feel great, and another guy saying we don't know if he feels great, but there is a chance that Freeman is not completely ready to go.
Right.
And if that's the case, then Swisher is probably your opening day first baseman.
Right.
That gives you a roster spot for Oliveira without having to cut anybody.
Oh, that's true.
And then if Freeman's on the DL for 2 weeks or something, then you can see who's worthless on that bench and release them. There's a lot of flexibility here. But anyway, the point is we're not expecting a whole lot out of Nick Swisher, but we do really, really like him.
Yeah.
He's just a likable dude.
Right.
With a pretty wife who used to be on, she was on... Reba, I think.
Did not know that.
Yeah, it's Reba's daughter.
Hey now.
She's also on How I Met Your Mother. She's the window girl.
Oh, right.
The window is only open for her to be single like 6 hours at a time every 3 years.
Yeah.
Or something. Yeah. And I think that's why Nick
Swisher. Jervis knows what the hell you're talking about.
Nick Swisher was also on. He was also on How I Met Your Mother once. Swisher was. All right, so that's the major league outfielders. Let's run through the minor leaguers.
And their filmographies.
Okay, first at the top of the list is Malik Smith, acquired by the Braves in the Justin Upton trade, I think, with San Diego last year.
Yes.
That sounds right.
That's right.
Malik Smith is 22 years old right now. He'll be 23 most of this season. Probably will be in AAA Gwinnett for most of the year, playing in center field. Does not seem to be a lot of power in his game. Like Chris said earlier, Michael Bourne is hopefully going to help him a little bit in spring training. I mean, assuming he needs help, I don't know. I don't know how much of that's necessary for some guys. But it's funny, on his list of comp players is Michael Bourne.
Yeah.
Weird how that happened.
Mm-hmm. Also, Billy Hamilton.
Oof.
And Gary Brown. Gary Brown's like the cautionary tale among them, though. Gary Brown was another guy who was a prospect like 3-4 years ago, I think, in the Giants system with Billy Hamilton speed, who just couldn't hit well enough to advance. Desmond Jennings is another guy listed. So that's interesting. Michael Bourne is the most obvious thing here for Malik Smith, because it's just so much about his game reminds you of Bourne.
You look at Malik Smith's season last year, and he made it up to AAA, got to Gwinnett, had a decent overall season with Gwinnett, if you look at the numbers, but really, it was a tale of two seasons at Gwinnett, because he was just awful. He was just awful, 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 terrible for about the first half of his run at Gwinnett. He hit .214 for the first, I think it was right at half. I'm looking at it right now from June 24th to August 5th. So from when he was called up to relatively halfway there. He hit .234 with a .277 on base and a .303 slugging. That's a .581 OPS at AAA. Then he went on a really, really good run for a span of about 2.5 weeks that really inflated those numbers, and then it started falling back down. I would like to see him get some more time at AAA this year for a couple of reasons. One is the selfish reason of don't start the clock unless you have to.
Yeah.
That extra year of arbitration can end up costing the team $6 or $7 million in the long run. So let's just go ahead and see what he has. That gives us a chance to showcase Bourne or somebody to try and move him.
Unless injuries are rampant in spring training, I see no reason he should be on the major league roster before September.
Right.
No reason. I mean, like you said, we promoted him aggressively, which may have been why he ran into struggles at AAA. He is he batted less than 300 times in high A. He batted less than 250 times in double A in his career. We brought him up now at 23. It's about normal for AAA, I guess, a 23-year-old or 22. Oh, he was young. He was young for AAA, I guess.
Right. He was 4 years below the league average.
Last year, he stole 57 bases and got caught just 13 times.
He has a skill set. He's probably a little bit better on base-wise than Jose Peraza. But for me, it seems like his progression has really kind of mirrored Peraza's progression. And we kind of saw it last year, and we've seen it more when the Dodgers got rid of him, that Peraza really plateaued at AAA and then up into the big leagues. Now, both of them are still young, and you can't really say, okay, his production plateaued, because there's always an adjustment level. I would just like to see a little bit more chance for Smith to adjust. None of this is saying he's not going to be a good player. I do hope if they do call him up and put him into the lineup as a regular player that he's lower in the order. I don't want him to feel the pressure of having to be the leadoff hitter for the major league club setting the table. I'd rather see somebody else like a Marquez or Inciarte doing that, or even Ibar rather than Malik Smith, just so that he doesn't feel overwhelmed and feel pressured to produce immediately.
Yeah, but I don't think it's going to matter because I don't see him coming up this year.
Right.
All right, next up is Connor Lean, 22-year-old, who can play every outfield position, left field, center field, right field, projected to be in double A this year, projected to be at Mississippi. Anything on Connor Lean?
No.
throughout his
really good year last year. High A.
At high A, he had a very good year. It was a breakout year. .285, wow. .347, .415. However, prior to that, he was pretty substandard. Although WRC Plus has him at 102, 102, 107, so probably league averages for them. Somewhat inflated strikeout rate, average walk rate. But yeah, last year was a good, solid all-around year for him. .285, .347, .415 slugging, hit 9 home runs, scored 72 runs, 34 stolen bases, all of that in 500 plate appearances, 128 games at high A.
He
had a horrible Arizona Fall League this year, but he's one to keep an eye on because he could actually maybe one of those guys that turns a corner.
Yeah, he's going to have to be. I think his future is as a contact and speed guy. And speed is there and the defense is there, but the contact is not quite there yet.
He's Todd Cunningham.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, Malik Smith is on the 40-man roster, so he will be in spring training. He is in spring training. Connor Lean is not. Next up is Keith Curcio.
Keith played in the Australian Baseball League last year.
Oh, nice. Yeah, he played for Melbourne. Drove in 6 runs. Good for you.
Well, he's not.
Yeah.
He was in Australia. There wasn't a lot of guys on base.
God, is it me? I'm sick of just having so many guys of the same profile. He is another guy who is speedy without much power.
Yeah.
I'm just, great. Okay. Except he's older than...
league average. He's 20.
Yeah, he's older than, like, Malik Smith, and he's the high A now.
He's playing foreign ball.
Yeah. All right. That's it for Keith Kersey. Next up is Stephen Gaylor, who is also projected to be in high A ball.
Was that our analysis of Keith Kersey?
Oh, no. Yeah. This is the new...
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh,
we did spend like 12 minutes on.
Yeah.
Who are we looking at now?
We're already up past the next guy too, Chris. Keep up.
Yeah, no.
You miss 1 week and this is what happens. They changed the format on you.
Yeah. Sorry. These guys, we're not going to waste too much time on some of these guys. Nothing to Keith Garcia. Stephen Gaylor. This one may be quick too.
Don't know Stephen.
Okay, so if you take away Keith Kersey, all right. So if you take Keith Kersey, you take away the little bit of power that he has, and you make him worse at stealing bases, you get Stephen Gaylor.
Nice.
Oh, but he does have some good on base numbers. But
he's also older than both of them.
I was about to say, my guess is he's a college player. If he had good, anytime I see good on base percentage numbers at rookie ball, I'm guessing. Barry?
Yeah, from Rome, Georgia.
Rome, Georgia?
Nice.
Which is where he's playing, so apparently he left his...
Yeah, just leave him in Rome.
Like, can he be mayor? Make him mayor.
Yeah. He's got more upside as a mayor.
That's a very good on-base percentage for... I mean, that's a .376 on-base percentage and 341 minor league at-bats.
Yeah, but was he there last year? Was he in Rome last year?
Yeah, he's 2 years older than the average.
Yeah.
Not everybody can be a phenom.
Hey, this guy is perfect for this podcast because he, if everything breaks right, one day he could be a player to be named later in a trade.
There you go.
I don't know. Yeah, he's a potential.
He's a guy.
Fifth outfielder, like a 4A guy. The guy you call up when someone's injured.
Sure. He's a guy.
He's a guy.
He's a dude. Sometimes, that's our in-depth analysis.
Sometimes he's a guy tells you all you need to know.
he's a guy.
Next up.
Ronald Acuna.
Low A, Ronald Acuna.
Ronald has gotten a lot of talk here recently for... he profiled well with some scouting profiles that came out. Really, really good speed from what I've read. I have not actually seen him play. One season of minor league ball, 237 plate appearances. 269, 380, 438, so an 818 OPS. He ended up with 16 stolen bases and 4 caught stealing.
Be careful talking about little speedy guys around Brent.
Yes.
Get angry again.
But he profiled with a lot of doubles and triples given that. I mean, of his 54 hits.
He was also 17 years old that entire 14, season.
14, 18.
I was going to say, he looks like a baby.
40% of his hits were extra base hits, which... accounts for that .438 slugging over.
He'll be 18 this entire season, and he's probably already going to be an A ball.
And he's 3 years at Danville last year. He was 3 years younger than the average. So
we're creeping up on the first professional player born in the aughts.
Right,
he was born in '97.
He'll be a guy to keep an interesting guy to keep an eye on this year, just to see how he progresses.
Yeah,
another Venezuelan.
He's a potential prospect, I think.
Yes, I agree.
He's a prospect.
A prospect.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, his WRC plus last year split between at low ball was 138 at 145 at the higher ranking. He seemed to progress better. He kept his walk rate high, and his ISO is pretty good. I mean,
I don't really know what he's projected to do power wise, but I'm also never going to ride off a 17 year old because he only has 4 home runs. That's
right.
That's solid.
Well, the 4 home runs by themselves are
literally still growing.
There was a lot of doubles and a lot of triples mixed in with there. Yeah. I mean, 40% of his hits went for extra bases last year. So that's something that is not terribly bad.
Right.
And he plays, what positions is he? He's got to be a center fielder.
That's center slash right is what he's.
Yeah. Six games at right. Now. Yeah, 6 games at right. So.
All right. The man, the myth, the legend. The free swinger.
Ronald Acuna.
Braxton, no. Braxton Davidson.
No, Jeff Francoeur.
How did we get to him so far down the list?
He used to play in our division. Name sounds familiar.
He's next.
So do we really have to cover Jeff Francoeur? I mean, it's a good
feel-good story. I don't mind the signing.
Him coming back. I mean,
he also had his first positive WAR last season since 2011.
True. He was actually very effective as a pinch hitter last year. He hit 316 as a pinch hitter. He
led the Braves in home runs last year?
I think he would have been second. I'm not sure. Second or lead?
Freeman.
Freeman hit 18.
Good right-handed power off the bench. Still has a cannon of an arm. Can't play the outfield very well. Strikes out a lot. Probably would be our emergency go-to closer.
You know, when he was winning his Gold Gloves, everybody thought he was amazing in defense when Andrew Jones was in center field. And then Andrew Jones left and Francoeur had to start playing normal right field.
Right.
And they're like, oh, he's just a regular right fielder with a good arm.
Yeah.
He's not the best in the game like we thought.
And don't get us wrong, the arm is amazing.
Yeah. But when you get to shade towards the line a few steps because...
When the best center fielder of all time is playing beside you,
right.
I look better.
Yeah. He had that crazy good year in 2011 with Kansas City.
Right.
47 doubles, 20 homers, 22 steals.
He's a guy that... if he has a decent spring and somehow makes the team out of spring training as a bench piece or something, we could flip him for, you know, a functional Tommy John reliever.
Yeah, I'm going to look and see how would he fit on our bench. How are we on?
We don't have anybody with options.
We have no power on the bench. I know that. We've got Swisher. We've got Bourne. We've got Bonifacio, Beckham.
So Bourne will be a left-handed bat. Swisher is a switch hitter. Beckham is the only purely right-handed bat off the bench we have right now.
Right.
It's generous to call Beckham a bat also. Bonifacio is a switch hitter, but again, I would bet on Francoeur out hitting Beckham or Bonifacio this year.
Yes. Right.
Maybe Swisher too.
Well, I don't expect Swisher unless, like I said, we were discussing earlier potential injury situations. I wouldn't expect Swisher to leave spring training as a Brave, but that's just my speculation.
Yeah.
It's not a knock on him. It's just we have too many players for the positions we have available.
Francoeur gives us the flexibility now to, if we can work something out with anybody for, like, even if we're picking up all but $1 million of Swisher's contract, we can trade him.
Right.
And we can have Francoeur stick on the bench.
And he does give legit power from the bench. I mean, he's probably not good to play every day.
Yeah.
But he's a guy who'll give you double-digit home runs if he gets 300 at-bats. So.
He's also a guy, too, if there's an injury out there, we can put him out in the outfield somewhere.
He's serviceable.
And keep Malik Smith from coming up.
He also said, I did read one of the gentlemen over at Tomahawk Take linked an article from, or not an article, a tweet from, I think, Dave O'Brien. Francoeur brought his first baseman's mitt to spring training and is getting first base reps out in the outfield after practices.
That's interesting.
I thought maybe he was going to get Freddie to autograph it for him.
There you go.
I love Francoeur. He's one of my favorite players, like, independent of... Like, I really like him a lot.
Right.
And I never really wanted him playing for my team all that much.
Right.
As a starter. Yeah, we know what Francoeur is, so it's fun to have him back in camp. It's a lot of fun. Next is a guy who sounds like he should be a quarterback, like a fourth-string NFL Europe quarterback, like the rest of his entire family, Matt Tuiasosopo.
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 He's probably another one of those he's a guys.
Yeah.
He's almost 30, playing minor league baseball. Left field, right field, first base.
Last played in the majors in 2013. Before that, last played in the majors in 2010. He's been about replacement level his entire career. There's not much there. There's a little bit of power. Last year, he hit 18 home runs in AAA as a 29-year-old. But he had on-base skills. There's just tons of strikeouts and not a lot of batting average ability there.
He has 401 career major league plate appearances. He's got 12 home runs. 207, 290, 356. He's a 646 OPS. Nothing special. Nothing to write home about. But he's probably a guy who can play off your bench if necessary. He's a depth guy.
Yeah. He's got some power. That's something unique in this system, sure. All right. Next is, Tuiasosopo is going to be, he is a non-roster invitee for spring training. So he's on the same page as Francoeur. May wind up in left field at AAA. And he's another guy who could play some first base, too. Next up is a projected double-A left fielder, center fielder.
He's real.
If he's real, if he's an actually existing person, Dion Toscano.
Who?
I don't know. It's a name.
Little Diddy.
What?
It's a name I've just read about for years.
Where? I know we've paid him for two damn years.
Oh.
This I love the Baseball Prospectus. We don't have a picture of this guy.
The picture on Baseball Prospectus is the Baseball Prospectus logo
with a hat.
A little blue hat on. Because
and it says literally below it, we don't have a picture of this guy.
No one does. He's the who's that Georgia wide receiver a few years ago who was supposed to be so good and everybody was talking about him and then he just never played. Jonathan Rumpf.
That's right.
He's the Jonathan Rumpf of Major League Baseball. Because I heard a lot about him. People were excited when we got him.
I think people were excited just because they heard that he was a Cuban and everybody was signing Cubans. Right. Even when he was in Cuba, he wasn't all that. He had a 400 on base percentage, but he wasn't particularly adept. He was never a regular player in Cuba. We actually signed him, assuming he exists, and we actually did sign him. And I think we did because we've been giving somebody his money for the last year and a half.
It could be the creation of a Ponzi scheme or something.
Possible. There's some accountant up in the front office who's creating players to pay.
Did Frank Wren sign this guy from the emails from a Nigerian prince, possibly?
His comps are interesting. The Easter Bunny.
Tooth Fairy.
Yeah, 98% for the Tooth Fairy. That's high.
Roy Hobbs, though.
He wants to
not bad.
He's probably not going to be a guy who does anything if he does exist. But I think people were a lot of people heard Cuban and were thinking big deal. If you're born
in the same place as Yasiel Puig, you're as good as Yasiel Puig. That's how it works.
Dion Toscano is just a guy that some scouts signed when they were scouting Hector Olivera when the Braves were down scouting Olivera during the winter.
We had him a year before that.
Oh yeah, we did, didn't we?
Yeah, because the whole lot.
He was signed when they went to look at somebody else, and they saw him playing on the field next field over.
Okay,
and said, "Okay, let's go ahead and offer him something."
Okay, I wasn't sure when we. For some reason, I thought we signed. Okay, we signed him. Yeah, no, it wasn't a year earlier, but it was before. It was in January of 20. So maybe it was when we were.
It was in the Hector Olivera offseason.
Yeah,
but it was before Olivera signed.
Okay,
we were scouting Olivera. Yeah. Along with everybody else. And Toscano was playing a field over. And let's throw some money at that guy. Maybe he'll turn out to be something. His contract was only 4 years, $6 million. So, yeah. You know, 1.5 a year for maybe he turns into something, maybe he doesn't.
Right. It's sort of a negligible loss.
Maybe you type in Dion Toscano Wiki. It pulls up the Wikipedia page for Toscano. And it's like, did you mean D. Toscano, the famous witch?
What?
Whoa. No, but now, did you mean D. Toscano, the famous witch?
That's
alrighty.
Hey, that's a thing.
More famous than...
You edited that yourself.
Toscano.
Okay.
Because one exists. The witch exists. The Toscano doesn't. The baseball player doesn't, but the witch
does.
Right,
we're more certain that this witch existed and had power than Dion Toscano, the baseball player.
I'm trying to find where it went. It, like, disappeared.
I almost wonder if the ghost of Pascal Perez has an Uber that he's just driving, Dion Toscano around on 285 in perpetuity for the rest of time.
That's good. Got literally in a baseball podcast googling D. Toscano, witch.
I wonder if he got caught up in some of that because he was being signed right about the same time that the relations between Cuba and the U.S. were changing, and they were changing the process for visa applications and whatnot. There's no way to tell. He's probably on some.
Yeah, I don't know. Nobody knows anything about him. Also, double-A left fielder Dustin Peterson acquired in the San Diego trade for Justin Upton, I think. Since there's two, I always forget.
Yes, Justin Upton.
I think he was one of the four guys in the Justin Upton trade. He's the brother of Mariners prospect DJ Peterson, I think. This guy was the third baseman, too, but we moved him to left field.
We do that a lot.
Yeah, well, apparently the defense was pretty bad. The offense wasn't great last year, either. He looks like a
guy?
Yeah, a guy. In fact, if his brother wasn't a top prospect, I doubt that he'd still be listed here.
Yeah, he's not profiling particularly well.
No, he's not.
Here's a guy that's the next guy is interesting for Braves fans. One of the remaining prospects from before the
great Wren purge.
The Wren purge. Braxton Davidson.
Oh yeah,
Braxton Davidson projected to be right field, left field, one or the other in High A. He's still not even 20 years old
yet. Yeah, he's 19.
I feel like I've been hearing about him forever. But
drafted in the 32nd in the first round in 2014.
Yeah.
He's had a rough go at it.
Last year. Well, he's striking out a ton. Yeah. Strikeouts are going to be an issue for him.
Looks like he's a non-roster invitee as well.
He is, which is interesting.
Really interesting.
But good on-base numbers. Really good on-base numbers. Yeah, he's got a good eye at the plate. So the fact that he's walking a ton and striking out a ton tells me there may be a hole in his swing somewhere, because he clearly has knowledge of the strike zone if he's walking 84 times and if his on-base is 140 points higher than his batting average. But when he's striking out that much, that means that he knows what to swing at, and he's just not making contact with it.
But when he does make contact, he's doing pretty well, as evidenced by, you know, he had 10 home runs last year. He's not going to be
He hits it hard.
Yeah, he hits it hard. His ISO is right around 120. It took a pretty good step up last year. He's probably still got to fill out physically a little bit.
Yeah, he's still young.
Still a young player. He's been kind of projected as maybe the guy to replace some power in right field or first base for Atlanta in the future. I don't know that he's going to be a big home run hitter. He strikes me more as a big doubles hitter, kind of a gap doubles hitter guy. Needs to work on that strikeout rate a little bit.
Also, tell him to stop running. He was 1-for-7 in steals last year.
Yeah, well, you know.
How do you do that?
He's 6'2", 210, and plays a corner position. So
their speed should be there.
Which means he's probably 6'1", 240 in place.
Right.
I don't know. He's a prospect, but there's a lot of development there before you have to start worrying about where he's going to play
right
in the majors.
He has some potential to be one of our few power bats coming up. When I say power, I don't necessarily mean home runs in his case.
Yeah, and one of his top comps.
Power is moving that way in baseball in general, right, anyway.
Nomar Mazara, who is a guy who's a good prospect from, I want to say, the Texas system. Let me check on that real quick. Yes, Texas. Which is at least interesting. It's nice to see a good prospect there linked to him. But yeah, I don't know. It's tough to really expect anything out of Davidson at this point, but there is potential. He's definitely a player to keep your eye on. And
good on-base skills, and when a guy that young has really solid on-base skills that are not driven by, you know, lucky bounces,
right?
Then it's not speed-driven, it's not, you know, BABIP-driven, that's a good sign, because that's something you can work with.
And he's not a college player either who had – he's a high school player who had those on-base skills, which is impressive. That's tough to do, but I don't know. I wonder if the swing is like too long or something because of the strikeouts. But that, who knows? Something could happen there. There's three more outfielders to go. Joseph Darris is going to be a High A outfielder of some sort, probably.
Another one that Brent won't like. Little speedster, no power.
Yeah, great. Let's see. Joseph Darris. Oh, wow. Just going to High A this year, and he is
24.
Already 24 years old.
He came from college, though, because he was drafted in the 14th round in 2014, so there had to be a college involved.
See, this is what I always hate. This is what drove me crazy
about
Frank Wren drafts back in the day, where he would only draft certain types of players, it seemed. He would only draft pitchers with high floors. He would only draft Mike Minor, Sean Gilmartin. Guys who, these guys are in every draft class. He was getting the guy who was the best bet to reach the majors. He would pass, on a Clayton Kershaw, a guy who maybe could flame out, but
had a much higher ceiling.
Yeah.
Whereas he would prefer the Mike Minor type, the guy who's, he may not be an award winner. He's unlikely to ever be an award winner, but he's going to pitch in the majors. And what you need is both. What you need is, both types of prospects. What you need is an Aaron Blair and a Sean Newcomb.
Right.
You need Aaron Blair, the guy who's going to be a major league starter for years, probably. And you also need Sean Newcomb, who may not be anything, but he may also be Matt Harvey.
Right.
And you need a combination. And Frank Wren never had that combination. And
you never end up with Matt Harvey's then.
It's drafting all these speed guys, speed slap hitter guys. I don't have a problem with having them, but we
have a problem
we got
with
so
having
many,
only them.
Yeah, I have a problem with having only them. We have no variety to our system. So,
yeah, Joseph Darius, it seems like his numbers are fine enough, but
yeah,
he's not.
But they're like the others in the system. How do you separate Joseph
and
Darius?
He's older and younger, or older and further away,
right.
I'll say.
Like, how is he better or worse than Keith Curcio or Stephen Gaylor? Or
then we have a 21-year-old who's doing the same thing and better than all of you.
So, Malik Smith.
Right.
Yeah. Next up, Justin Ellison. He will be probably in low A this year. Probably a Rome outfielder with Ronald Acuna and Israel Wilson, who we'll get to in a second. Justin Ellison, probably left fielder among those three. He's 21-year-old. He's
not played a lot yet.
Nah, just less than 200 at-bats in pros so far.
416 slugging last year.
Is he drafted last year? ISO. He seems young.
12th round of 2015 out of Western Oklahoma State.
12th round pick. Man, I thought we just drafted pitchers last year. Yeah, so we drafted an outfielder.
Only in the first 4 days.
That's too early to know what he is, really.
Yeah, he had a decent slugging percentage and ISO in that first year, so... He doesn't profile as a small, speedy, slap-hitter guy, so
yeah,
that's a plus.
Oh, by the way, if we've talked about ISO a little bit, and I don't know if we've ever really explained it. ISO is slugging percentage minus batting average, and it's just a quick and dirty measure of how much power a guy has.
Right. It basically measures the extra base hits of the guy.
Yeah. It's slugging percentage taking out the singles is all it is. So
what do y'all think the, like... Average. What's an amazing ISO?
Anything good? Anything over 200 is good.
You can have guys like Nick Markakis who have hit a lot of singles and doubles, and they have a pretty solid ISO because of
the doubles,
the singles keeping it high, the regular singles keeping it high, and
it,
then
it doesn't include singles though, at all.
No, I'm talking about. Well, I'm sorry, in slugging.
Oh, slugging. Yes.
Singles can keep if you hit a lot of singles, your slugging can stay artificially inflated by. A really high number of singles.
Right.
An excellent ISO rating is about a 250. A great ISO is 200. Above average, roughly about 170. A league average ISO is going to be about 135, 140. But when you start seeing the 096s and the 100s, that's guys who are generally going to be your Malik Smiths, your slap hitters, slapping the ball into the ground or hitting singles, Michael Bourne, guys like that.
Right. In the early days, Ichiro Suzuki was slugging 450 every year. So his slugging percentage gave you the indication that he was a slugger.
Right.
Because those are pretty good slugging numbers. And they're not amazing, but 450 is good. And what it was, though, was he was batting 350 and 372.
Right.
And so his ISO would be only like low 100s or in the 080s
right.
or whatever for those years. And
because
so
the singles was keep,
the singles keeping the... was driving his slugging percentage. Anyway, back to Justin Ellison. He's a super young guy who's going to be in single A this year. And, you know, we drafted him in, you said, the 12th round last year.
Round, yep.
All right, joining him, maybe going to be right fielder on the Rome team this year, Israel Wilson.
So he's the exact opposite of your slap speed guy.
Yes.
He's swing for the fences and miss a lot.
Yeah, he had a 32% strikeout rate at low ball last year. He hit 10 home runs and 173 plate appearances, which is very nice. He also walked a lot, 479 slugging, 149 WRC plus. But man, that strikeout rate, ooh, doggy.
He's also 17 at the moment.
True. He was an international free agent in July of 2014, and he is turning 18.
Next week.
Happy birthday.
His isolated slugging was 257.
Right.
Which is very good. We like that.
Really good for a 17-year-old rookie.
Right.
This guy has a lot of power potential. The strikeouts may not work themselves out, but they may.
Had a 222 batting average last year, but a 349 on base percentage. That's Dan Uglin numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
complete with the strikeouts.
He's an interesting guy for this system, so that's reason alone to watch him.
Still young, real young guy.
Really young.
And he also should not be running. 3 out of 7 in stolen bases.
For him, it may be a case of he may not know what he's doing yet.
Right.
He's never been on first or second before.
I'll go now.
Right.
Yeah. He usually just trots.
And maybe they were doing the same thing with Davidson last year, too, which was like, you need to run on this.
Right.
play. Yeah. And he goes, okay.
Right.
And gets caught. But, yeah, Israel Noel Wilson, I was not really familiar with him.
Yeah, but it looks like keep an eye on him in the next few years.
Yeah.
This or 4 or 5 years, even. He's...
I think that covers most of the outfielders that we have.
Yeah, you are now system. You are now up to date on all the outfielders in the Braves system.
So to recap, every position player
is now done.
Two prospects, a Malik Smith and 5 slap hitting guys that Brent doesn't like, and a couple of guys.
And that one guy we don't even talk about. Who's that?
And then
you know what you did, Steven.
Yeah. Keith Curcio. Read by him on your own.
And the invisible man, Deon Toscano.
Right. Yeah, we don't have a picture of this guy.
Braves have a lot of bodies. Not all of them are going to pan out, obviously. Some of them are just there for depth. There's a couple of decent prospects to keep the eyes on, Malik Smith being the closest one to the major leagues, obviously. Braxton Davidson's getting a non-roster invitee to spring this year. He'll probably see the major leagues in 2 to 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always going to be other guys drafted and other guys traded for, prospects traded for over the next couple of years before the Braves are really back into contention.
And also, I meant to stress this earlier, and a lot of people are still saying Malik Smith is like center fielder of the future. No, center fielder of the future, I think, is Ender Inciarte.
Yes.
I think we've got him for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Play Malik Smith in left field until, or right field, either one, yeah, depending on his arm, until Inciarte is ready to be shipped off before his free agency.
And then so that's a fun 1-2 punch at the top of the order for a couple of years.
And that covers a lot of ground. That means we could move Markakis closer to the line, or whoever, Oliveira closer to the line.
I would really like a Markakis Inciarte top of the order.
Yeah. I agree. I like that 1-2 punch.
And then Ibar is pretty good as a 7 or an 8 hitter.
I agree.
Where
I don't want to see. I'm not particularly keen on Ibar at the leadoff position or number 2 position, which is where some lineup projections have had him. I really like Markakis, Inciarte.
I'd bet Ibar 9th.
If I had my choice, ooh, that's not a bad idea.
Yeah. I don't know.
But then you get into the arguments of you're just doing that because Tony La Russa pitcher 9th. You're being different. He also did it when he had Albert Pujols because he wanted runners on base when Pujols came up.
He did it when he had Mark McGwire as well. Yeah. Started, I think. So he wanted him to bat with more people on base, but he wanted him to bat more.
And there's logic to it. The question is you have to stick with it. You can't just do it and then after 8 or 9 games or 10 games say, okay, this isn't working.
The thing, too, that sucks about it is, like, are you going to piss off anybody by making them bat nice? Is Ibar going to be like, What are you doing to me?
Right.
Like,
if you explain it properly, if you explain why you're doing it and say, listen, we want you to function as our second leadoff man. So you
can score more runs.
So because you're going to be coming up to – when you're on, now you're going to be on base, and instead of Nick Markakis – or instead of Julio Teheran trying to bat you in, now you're going to have Nick Markakis and then Ender Inciarte. And if you're
our three best hitters.
You're going to be Freddie Freeman hitting you, you know. So
Markakis is a left-hander, right?
Yes, but he does not have significant splits. I looked at that the other day.
Inciarte. Right-handed? No, lefty. He's a lefty. Sounds Freeman.
Well, my original lineup had A.J. batting 4th, too, so that would have been 4th.
Freeman and the lefties, though. I mean, Freeman and if you've got some like monster left-handed changeup, you can maybe mess with it. But Freeman and Markakis, their splits aren't that.
Freeman has a measurable but not significant split. Markakis does not. Markakis is roughly the same batter, lefty versus righty.
I think maybe what I would do is, I don't know, maybe instead what I would do is bat Inciarte 7th.
Right.
Pitcher 8th. Ibar 9th. Markakis 1st. Freeman 2nd. Just get more bats for Freddie.
I would love to bat Freeman 2nd. Then you can put Oliveira 3rd. He's a righty. You can also put Oliveira 2nd. You can do Markakis, Oliveira, Freeman.
Yeah, that's not bad either.
I think Oliveira's going to run into a lot of outs, though. Like, just agree with more than. Plus, it just gets us 40 more bats of Freddie Freeman.
I'm a fan of batting Freeman 2nd. There's a reason Mike Trout batted leadoff in 2nd.
Yeah.
Because you can get 100. If I can get 100 more bats of my best hitter, then let's do it.
Yeah. Anyway, that's our outfield talk.
The next time you hear us, it'll be baseball being played.
There will be games being played. I don't know when the first televised game is going to be, but
I don't know.
They usually wait a week or two on that.
Yeah.
But, there's actual... We'll do pitchers next time we get together, unless there's a lot of news to talk about. And then after that, it's all
real season
baseball season stuff, which is super exciting.
Yeah, super fun.
Even though, as excited as I am for this team, just imagine when the team's going to be worth a damn, how excited we may be. down the road.
Yeah. But
anyway, thanks for listening.
And check us out on outfieldflyroll.com. Check us out, Outfield Fly Roll group and page on Facebook.
Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes.
And drink Dry County beer.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, have a good one.